Welcome back to part two of Q&A with Victoria and Sabrina. Let's dive straight in and start where we left off. Sabrina, was it your turn to ask a question or mine? I can't remember now.
I think it was your turn. I can't even remember, but I have a question here that we kind of briefly touched on, but I would love to know. And it's about your personal experience. And it's about, how did you overcome your eating disorder? So I'm going to preface this. Anyone who hasn't heard my first podcast interview with Victoria, episode 6, I believe, of the Live Unrestricted podcast. We had an amazing interview with you and you kind of explained your story. So before we talk about how you overcame your eating disorders, because I know that you had multiple, can you just describe your story a little bit of what it was like, your struggle with food and your body?
Absolutely. So check out the episode, as Sabrina said, but in a chocolate nutshell, my story and how I overcame it. So I developed anorexia when I was around 12, 13 years old. That morphed into, well, before it morphed into bulimia and binge eating, I was in quotes, recovered because the medical team thought I was weight restored because I was in the quote healthy BMI. Now I'm at my set point weight now and my healthy BMI is actually overweight. So even though I was in the healthy BMI, I was still very underweight for me and my individual body. So I think that's really worth stating. So I recovered, sort of like semi-recovered. And then that just, the anorexia morphed into binge eating, bulimia, exercise addiction, laxative addiction until I was 30 years old. And now I'm 36. I'm very spiritual also. There's that whole like death and rebirth thing that's happened. Like I honestly feel like before I was 30, it's like a past life or something. And mm-hmm. then this is who I am now, but it's been a heck of a journey. How I recovered. Okay. How can I put this long story short? How I recovered. Number one, I wanted to recover. And I think that's really worth noting because I speak to a lot of women and they're in the hellhole of either anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, and they say they want to recover, but they're not ready and willing to actually do what it takes to recover. And of course, you are going to be petrified. Of course you are. You know, when you take a step into the direction of the life you want to live, the first thing you're going to come across is fear. And you nod and you keep fucking walking. And that's why support. I know, Sabrina, you said you recovered by yourself. I didn't. I had multiple different, I mean, this is quite arrogant, what I'm going to say anyway. It's my interpretation of arrogance, so it probably isn't. I wish I had a coach like me when I was recovering and I didn't. So I had like an intuitive eating coach, a spiritual life coach, and I kind of put all of the things that I learned from them and like brought it all together and like made it fit for me. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest thing was wanting to. The second biggest thing was deciding that the life that I had lived in the eating disorders was not worth being in that place anymore. And I wanted something different. So I guess that is linked to wanting to. Then I had to face the biggest fear of my entire life, and that was weight gain. So we've spoke about that in part one about how to overcome that and like what that looks like, what to journal on, all of that. There's a lot of mirror work I did that was really beneficial. And I had
Can I stop you? Yeah. Right here. I know that maybe our listeners don't know what that means. So what do you mean by mirror work?
Yes. So I would sit in front of a mirror naked every day and start just being okay with looking. And I had so much hatred and anger and shame and disgust come up and I couldn't look. And I just kept returning to the mirror every day and just being okay with looking and crying and just being with myself without trying to push the emotions away or diet them away or think of another diet. And then as I got to learn how to be with myself, I started focusing on, okay, what am I actually grateful for about my body? What can I focus on that brings me a better feeling than just neutrality, which is what I had to start with? And then from that mirror work, I started dressing in sexy underwear just for myself and dancing in front of the mirror and doing yoga in front of the mirror. And truly seeing myself for the first time, not looking at myself from a specific angle to make sure my tummy looks flat or my bum looks okay like I used to do, but really allowing myself to be seen by myself, regardless of whether I liked the way my body looked or not. So that was very, very healing for me. You can also do this work with your partner if you have a safe sexual partner. This is something I coach my one-to-one clients with, not with their partners actually doing the thing, but I coach them through the support of what this looks like. And that is having sex in front of the mirror with their partner and the partner touching the parts of, this was for me, touching the parts of my body I kept rejecting, and seeing that and having that mixed with pleasure and love and vulnerability, that's really powerful to do as well. So mirror work was big for me. Also, this two quotes that I just took with me through recovery, one was from Tabitha Farrar, and that still sticks with me to this day. Strong, authentic women do not suppress their natural body size. And that spoke to my soul. Wow. And also, whatever it fucking takes. Because I knew I was done with the eating disorders and I needed to do something different. So when recovery got really hard and all I wanted to do was restrict and diet and get a smaller body, I would just sit with the feelings without running away from them, remind myself, strong, authentic women don't suppress their natural body size, whatever it fucking takes. And I'd use my coach or the support I had at the time to keep moving forward. And lastly, I mentioned this in part one, I did do a lot of inner child work, trauma release from the codependency and neglect from childhood. There was a lot, and I'm going to stop there because there's so much there.
Yeah. And you said so many things here that I took notes on, because everything that you said was just really powerful. And for anyone who's listening right now and who might be feeling overwhelmed, because you're like, there is so much for me to heal and there's so much to do, that you may not even want to start doing this work because you don't think that you'd be capable of do it. I think that it's really important to mention that you didn't do this overnight. No. And you didn't go into it thinking, I'm going to start doing mirror work and child work and identity work and doing all of that at the same time. Because yeah, if you go into it, and I know that a lot of my clients, when we start working in the Food Freedom Academy, they want to have everything figured out from the beginning. They're like, but are we going to be working on this? And are we going to be doing this? And I'm like, yes, we will be doing all of that, but not yet. Because in order to move on to this stage and to this phase, we need to have this figured out yet. And I think in my kickoff call with my clients, I always talk about goal setting. And I talk about how to set a detached goal, which means when you're going after recovery, if you're coming at it from a place of, I am broken, I am not enough, and I need to be fixed, then you're gonna feel very impatient. Because until you feel quote unquote fixed, you're gonna feel like you're behind, like you're not doing enough. And that's what is called an attached goal. And you feel that you're attached to a goal when you feel really impatient. You feel like you're going too slowly. And that's when you're coming from a place of, I am not enough. And if you don't think that you are enough at the starting point, then you're gonna carry that belief all throughout recovery, and it's gonna make it so much harder. So you need to start, even if it feels hard, you need to start. And a lot of the mindsets that I teach my clients, I can relate back to my business. And I'm sure that you felt that as well, because there is a lot of goal setting when it comes to business. There is a lot of growth. There is so much to learn. And it is easy to be impatient. It is easy to feel like you're behind or compare yourself to others. But if you approach any kind of goal with this sense of impatience, and you don't take in the mentality that if the goal is to feel happier, if the goal is to feel better, again, we're going towards a feeling, not towards the thing itself. How can I start bringing some of that into my life now so that I don't feel as impatient to quote unquote fix myself?
Yes, because nobody is broken. That's why on my website and the language and the words that I use is coming back home to self-love, remembering who you are. You don't need to learn how to love yourself. It's who you are. It's like the sun saying, how do I learn how to shine? Well, that's what it is. It is light. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about, like Sabrina said, and it's interesting because when we go on diets, it's usually a quick fix, isn't it? It's like within this many days or weeks or months, then we'll have the quote goal. But recovery is a journey of healing, understanding yourself, and it all unfolds as it should. And here's the thing, things that are not ready to come up yet to be healed won't do. So I like to use this metaphor, like, you know, when you have a really big spot under your skin and it's one of those really painful ones and you can feel it coming up. And if you try and squeeze it before it's ready, it fucking hurts and you can't.
It just ruins it. Yeah.
And you can't get, this is gross, but you can't get the pus out of it because it's not ready yet. And so that's like our healing journey. So when all your stuff, maybe from childhood or around your body, when it's ready, it will come up to be healed and you will know about it because it will gift it to you. It might not be the gift that you're expecting. It might not feel great, but it will come one at a time. And with the right support, with myself or Sabrina or someone else who you trust and resonate with, who's been through it, it will all unfold as it should. So it is one day at a time. And it's also choosing with the right support to have what you want now as you work towards that detached bigger goal. So it's such a beautiful journey and it all unfolds as it should. So what's that old saying? Like, how do you walk 1,000 miles? You start with the first step. That's all it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. And every day, if you're working on creating a 1% improvement in how you feel, that is going to compound over time. But we need, especially when we're coming from a background of chronic dieting, where we're used to the overnight success and we're used to the quick fixes. It's if you're approaching your recovery journey or healing your relationship with food and your body, not only are you working on something entirely different, right? Like, we're unlearning everything that you've learned through diet culture, but the way that you're approaching it needs to be different as well. Because usually when you start on a diet, what's interesting is that as days goes on, you feel worse. Yeah. You feel worse about yourself. You feel more like a failure. Whereas we're doing the opposite. When you're working on recovery, every day is to just feel slightly better, or to know yourself better, or to discover and to learn about yourself and your patterns and get curious. So really the way that you're approaching this entirely different goal is different. And that's why when any time someone approaches me and wants to learn about my coaching, I'm sure you feel that the same way, they have some resistance because they're like, I've done everything before. Mm-hmm. How is this going to be different? It's like you're comparing apples to oranges. This is two completely different things, different mindsets and different approaches to how you achieve a goal.
Absolutely. Definitely. All right, Sabrina, let's go into like an exercise question. So the question is, how do you let go of an exercise compulsion when it makes you feel better?
Okay. Wow. Okay. What a good question, because I definitely had exercise compulsion. So little context, I developed an exercise addiction, which was driven by compulsion and guilt and wanting to change my body size. And I would brag for years. I would brag about the fact that I could not take more than one day off. And so for about, I think, 2 to 3 years, I never took more than one day off of exercise. And that one day off was filled with guilt and feeling like this need to exercise. And I remember, like, Christmas Day, I would wake up before breakfast and I would do an intense workout to deserve or to earn my food for the day. So healing my relationship with exercise has been really key. And the thing is that exercise, I still do because it is necessary to my well-being and it makes me feel good. But the difference is that you're able to notice when you're moving towards exercise from a place of should, external pressure, like negative emotion, or when it's coming from a place of I truly want to. The intention behind it is huge. And allowing yourself to really, and this comes back, I know you talk about intuition a lot, allowing yourself to sit down and ask yourself, where is this desire or this need coming from? Do I think that, do I know that it's going to make me feel better and it's going to make me feel more energized and more focused because I like to exercise in the morning? Or I'm able to put myself in the mindset of how am I going to feel afterwards? And I'm able to get very honest with myself of, if I exercise now, then it might actually make me feel worse. It might drain my energy. It might, maybe my body's aching. I live with chronic pain, so being able to be in tune with that as well. So knowing how exercise will actually make you feel and the intention behind making those choices.
I think the intention is so key. I heard this from, I think it was Louise Hay, like 5 years ago now. Maybe it was where I heard it from. Every single thing is either born from love or fear. And yeah. I come back to that over and over again daily if I need to. Is this thought, is this behavior driven from love or fear? And here's the thing, only you will actually know the answer to that, because a behavior such as exercise, depending on the person's judgment or interpretation of that person exercising, it could be from a place of love because it makes you feel good, you have all this energy, it's a good nourishing thing for your body to do. Or it could be from fear, a compulsion that you have to do it because the eating disorder says you have to, it's to burn calories, it's to stay smaller. It's the same behavior, but there's a different intention behind it. And so I did want to speak to the way she said, how do you let go of an exercise compulsion when it makes you feel better? Well, of course it makes you feel better, because the compulsion is this intense anxiety. And so when you do what the eating disorder tells you to do, or the compulsion or the obsession tells you to do, there's a release of anxiety because you've done the thing it's wanting you to do. So this is a difficult one, because exercise does make you feel great, and it's such a big part of my life as well. But if it's an OCD compulsion,
yeah,
I would advise stopping it and doing something completely different. So let's say someone's bike riding intensely for 2 hours a day. I would say, instead of that, because you know it's born from fear and the eating disorder, I invite you to replace it with a 40-minute walk.
Yes.
Till you get rid of the thing you have to do at a certain time for so long at a certain intensity, because that's just an eating disorder rule, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. My exercise addiction was really born out of something that could be innocent, but it was when I first got my Fitbit. And then I was able to count my steps and count my calories and really be micromanaging everything that I did. And what I noticed over time, what started as something I was super excited about, what I noticed over time became obsessive and would give me anxiety. And all of my workouts were not born out of true desire to feel better. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned there's a delineation between feeling better physically and feeling better emotionally or mentally because you've satisfied that compulsion or that anxiety, which doesn't necessarily make you feel better, but it makes you feel like you checked something off of the list to do.
Yeah.
So when I noticed that, yes, exercise can make me feel better physically, but it also was born out of this obsession with my Fitbit to close my rings or get my workouts and my steps done, I did the thing that made me extremely uncomfortable, which was take a break from my Fitbit. And this sounds so small and so insignificant, but anyone who has had an unhealthy relationship with their fitness tracker knows that your brain will start thinking exercise doesn't count anymore because it's not tracked. Yeah. I am someone who is very type A, very like structured and disciplined, and I love tracking and I love having numbers. I have a numbers background. And so taking a break from my Fitbit, the first few days are very uncomfortable. And if you're noticing that discomfort, that's almost like a sign to keep going and to keep diving into that discomfort, because exercise is meant to make you feel good, and it's meant to come from a genuine desire. It's not meant to kind of check something off of your to-do list. So the same compulsions that you would feel from tracking food, for example, or following food rules that are born out of fear, if you're noticing there is discomfort in stopping the behavior, a behavior that is not healthy, a behavior that is not serving you, this goes for any behavior in your life, then move towards that discomfort, because that's a sign of an area that needs to be healed.
Yes. The best thing, one of the best things I ever did was sell my Fitbit and treat myself to a massage instead.
Yes. I love that.
I got rid of it. I don't wear any tracking or anything, and that's just really serving to me. Mm-hmm. Sabrina, do we have time
yes.
for one more question?
Yes, this is a little bit more specific. What to do about sugar addiction?
Oh, I love this question.
Yeah.
What to do about sugar addiction? Well, first of all, in my professional opinion and personal opinion, you cannot be addicted to sugar. Now, I've done a whole episode actually titled, Is Sugar Addiction a Thing? So you can listen to that, watch that, where I go in depth with the science back behind it as to why. Because there's those studies like, oh, sugar is more addictive than cocaine. No, all they've done there is give rats the option to either eat sugar or cocaine. Well, I don't know about you, but if I've got chance to eat cocaine or sugar, I'm going to choose actual food, which is sugar. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of trials that have been done that actually aren't portrayed in the truth of how they're portrayed in the media. And so
another thing about those rat studies is that those rats had been deprived yes. of sugar, had been deprived of fuel in general. And so anyone who is in deprivation, who has intermittent access to mm-hmm. food, if you are provided with sugar, which is a fast acting source of energy, of course our body is going to go towards it versus cocaine, which will not provide us true fuel. So I could go on for hours about the studies around sugar addiction, but I want to come back to you. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, no, really great point, Sabrina. It's ridiculous when you look into the evidence behind it. And here's the thing, the more you try to restrict sugar, the more, quote, addictive you will feel towards the sugar. So therefore you will binge, eat a shitload of it, and then tell yourself, there you go, see, I'm addicted to sugar. And then you like, it's his own feedback loop. So with a true addiction, the more of it you have, the more of it you want. But with intuitive eating and food freedom, you may eat a lot of it when you first stop restricting, because I was literally eating, I'm not exaggerating, 1 kilogram of chocolate every night for months. That mm-hmm. is not, quote, normal, but I just kept trusting and allowing. And now I have chocolate a couple of times a week when I want it. I don't weigh it, obviously, but if I was to guess, maybe like a family size bar once or twice a week. So the more you have it, the more you allow it with emotional allowance, because there's a difference mm-hmm. between physically allowing yourself to have sugar and then judging the shit out of yourself for it. That's still restriction, which will create a reaction to that. And so the more sugar you have, the less sugar you crave. You can't get addicted to it physically. Emotionally, you may be dependent on it, which is why we add in all the ways of taking care of yourself, all of that stuff. Again, there's not enough time to go into it, but what would you like to add to that, Sabrina?
For anyone who feels like they're struggling with sugar addiction, I would ask yourself two questions. Number one, what is your relationship with actually eating sugar? So are you trying to cut it out? If you're noticing that this is a food that you are, maybe you're restricting for a week, 2 weeks, a couple of days, and then when you do have it, it feels out of control, then that gives you a really good sense the physical restriction there might be contributing to that loss of control. Yeah. If you're like, no, I eat it all the time, then ask yourself, what is your emotional relationship with sugar? So that's where we're getting into that emotional, that unconditional permission to eat, because you may not be physically restricting a food, and we can broaden this to carbs in general, because I know that people feel like they have a carb addiction as well. You may not be physically restricting the food, but emotionally, you're telling yourself that you shouldn't be eating this, that this is a bad food, that you're guilty, and you have all of that internal negative food police telling you that you're doing something wrong. So of course, if you feel like you are being a rebel or you're breaking a rule, then you will want to consume as much of that food. And this happens all on a subconscious level. No one intentionally does this. And that's why I think you do this as well. Like, my coaching focuses on what's happening subconsciously, the blind spots that you don't even know that are happening, that you have. So when your brain thinks that this is the only time that you're going to be having this food, even if you're going to be having it again tomorrow and you're going to be having it the day afterwards, there is that loss of control to eat it all before someone sees you, or to throw away the wrappers. There's so much guilt and shame wrapped up into it, which is why your actual relationship with these foods, the way that you feel, the way that you think about these foods, is the most important thing to focus on.
Yes. And I would just quickly add, those that come at me with, but what about the dopamine hit that, you know, scientific results are showing that when you eat sugar, you have this massive dopamine rush. Yeah, you also get that when you, I mean, serotonin is when you hug your pet, when you listen to music, or when you do something else that is pleasurable to you. Yet we're not worried about being addicted to hugging our pet or listening to music that we love, are we? And so, and also, we live in the world we live in. Unless you want to go and live on a desert island or in the jungle all by yourself, where you have no access to any processed foods or sugar, be my guest, have a good time, and then probably you'd be able to not want to eat sugar again in 10 years' time when you're back in the normal life. We do live in the world we live in. Restriction creates a reaction, which creates binge eating and obsession, which can feel like addiction. We do live with sugar around us. So the only way forward for a peaceful relationship with food is to allow it, emotionally allow it, get the support, and to love yourself and do all the body image work. And then sugar is just a delicious, pleasurable part of your life.
Yes, I think that we could do a full episode on sugar addiction, but I want to add one last comment, and it's to get curious on if you feel like the dopamine and the high that you get from sugar is something that you are addicted to. Explore outside of food if you're getting enough dopamine, enough joy. Because if food, yes, it is a massive source of pleasure. I love food, I'm a foodie. But if your joy is not diversified, if you don't feel like you're satisfying your self-care needs, you have hobbies, you have connection, and food becomes that sole source for you, then the dopamine and the feel good hormones that you're going to get from it feel so much stronger, because it's your only source.
Absolutely. What a perfect way to end. That is so true. Sabrina, I could talk to you forever.
Yeah, I know. I know. We have to do these more often.
Definitely. If you do want us to do this more often, please let us know, because if you ask, we will deliver. So let us know. Thank you for chatting with me today. I know this is going on both of our podcasts. So thank you to your listeners. Thank you to my listeners. Much love to all of you, and I'll see you next time.
Yes. And just so that any of my listeners can find you on Instagram or your podcast, where can they find you?
Yes, I forgot about that, didn't I? So I'll ask you the same question in a moment. So mine's really easy. If you go to my website, victoriakleinsman.com, at the bottom of the pages, there's all of my social links you can click from there. And my podcast is The Body Love Binge. And Sabrina, how can we find you?
Yeah, so they can find me on Instagram at Sabrina Magnol Health. And my podcast is Live Unrestricted. And that's where they can find me.
Amazing. Thank you so much, and much love to everybody listening.